It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe, at high noon here on a Monday at SEC Media Days in Atlanta. We're at the College Football Hall of Fame, and our coverage is all presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Also have great locations on Highway 100 in Bellevue and in West Nashville on Charlotte Pike. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe with you. And you know what, Joe? Let's just kick it off. Let's get things going with a Commodore. Randon Fontanette is with us here on the program. What's going on, my man? How you feeling?
Blessed, you know, blessed to be here. Yeah. Blessed for the opportunity.
Has it been overwhelming, fun, like walking around? Like, what's it been like for you?
It's been a good experience. You know, this is my first year here. Hopefully my last, you know, do good this year and be out. But, you know, it's a great experience. I love it.
Different kind of feeling. I mean, you guys are here now beating Alabama. I mean, that got you to the next level. But now you guys walk around like they know your name. Does that make sense?
You know, for me, yes, it does, because it's a lot of hard work behind, you know, behind what people don't see. So it makes a lot of sense.
Well, what's this offseason been like for you guys? I mean, the big win over Alabama, winning the bowl game, and I know you couldn't play because you had an illness, and now coming back, a lot of hype. But you guys still, like we talked to Diego and your head coach, still very humble, right?
You know, I feel like we have the same mentality. You know, we're hunting, you know. We're still the underdogs. We're still... You know, we're still not respected. So, you know, we're keeping the same mentality as last year.
Does that come from the head coach?
Yeah, definitely. But it also comes from our background situations. Like my background, you know, I wasn't highly recruited. You know, I felt like I should have been more, you know, heavily recruited, but I wasn't. So, you know, just having that mentality, you know, from all the things that you've been through. So, you know, that comes from us and the coach, I would say.
What did Coach Lee bring to the defense last year? And I know that's changing a little bit this year, but that was such his forte, you know, in Notre Dame, and then coming into Vandy. What was that like?
You know, it was elite. He brought an elite defensive mindset to our defense because, you know, like you said, he came from Notre Dame. He had an elite defense, so you know all the different areas that you know the pass defense needed to improve on. You know, he made those improvements, you know, with the schemes, you know, with adding me and other, you know, other key pieces to make it really go.
He talked, Coach Lee did, about the Auburn win. He felt like he squeezed everything out of the tube for you guys that day. But he learned something about that football team and you guys specifically about fight. What did you remember from that game? I know it's last year, but what did that tell you about the mindset of this football team?
It showed the mindset that, you know, we're going to go compete no matter what. You know, no matter the circumstances, you know, it was a tight game. It was a dog fight. So, you know, we learned that, you know, we're not going to stop punching until, you know, the fight ends.
Keep on going. Huh? What did you make of Diego's comments when he went on that podcast about we're going to run this state? And we're like, look, man, just be quiet now. Or you're like, hell yeah. What was your reaction?
I love it.
You know, I loved it. You know, I'm a competitor. So, you know, Diego, he knows, you know, we have nothing but respect for Tennessee. They're a great program.
Right.
You know, we're trying to get, you know, to Tennessee's level. But, you know, Diego's a competitor. So, you know, I loved it.
We're talking to Randon Fontanette from Vanderbilt with us. When you kind of – he mentioned it's last year.
Yeah.
How do you take some of the bad times, some of the losses, and build off that for this year? Diego was over here earlier. You'll hear that conversation in a little bit and kind of talked about that. How do you view that?
So you're saying how do I view, you know, our losses?
Yeah, you know, how you can build off that this year.
I feel like it shows that, you know, we can compete with anybody in the country. So, you know, it gives us confidence. It gives us confidence in ourselves and our teammates to trust each other and to know that the stuff that we've seen on film that we need to clean up to close those tiny margins to, you know, come out on top, it shows that, you know, we just got to keep fighting.
Coach could have brought 50 players down here. He can only bring three. He brought you as one of the three. What does that mean?
You know, I'm blessed. You know, it's a blessing. I'm grateful for the opportunity. You know, this time last year, I was just trying to figure it out, you know, figure my role for the defense, figure, you know, what was next for me. And, you know, coming here a year later, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity. You know, I just thank God. I thank Coach Lee for believing in me. And, you know, the only way is up.
I love it. Randon Fontanette is with us. You're a former quarterback in high school, right?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a little Diego win you when he leaves?
Hey, I mean, if I got to, I told him, if Diego go down, coach, I'm ready. For real.
Yeah,
another two coming in, you can't go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Randon, thanks so much for doing this. I know Charleston Southern, that's next up on the schedule. That's the next one, but it's going to be a fun year for sure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you all for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Randon Fontenette, linebacker from the Commodores, joining us to kick things off here at SEC Media Days. We're actually going to keep things moving quite a bit. Thank you, young man. And let you know that Clark Lee is going to join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. Diego Pavia will be next hour. But right now, as we keep things going here on Radio Row, or Media Drive, as they've call it, we say hello to DQ Smith. He is a DB from South Carolina, the Gamecocks,
yes, sir,
in town. Hey, listen, we had our Vandy guys on. You know, uh-huh. we're in Nashville, so we're the flagship station. Last year, as a Vanderbilt fan, was a little tough for me to watch because the Gamecocks took care of business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we took care of business. I'm really good at that.
Do you guys feel like, because I felt like going into last year that maybe there was South Carolina, what are they going to do? Do y'all still feel the chip on your shoulder, or now are people paying attention?
I feel like it's kind of both. I feel like people are paying attention, but at the same time, we still have a chip on our shoulder because, you know, with our history, you know, sometimes it could be down years, and, you know, sometimes it could be up years, but, you know, we still have that chip on our shoulder, and we're not looking back.
Coach Beamer, what kind of mentality does he bring to your team? Because, I mean, we've watched him all day. I mean, you can see he's a fiery guy. You can tell he's really into this. How does that translate when he's talking to you guys?
You know, he's definitely one of those coaches that, you know, just – he's very intense on what he says, and when he says something, he means it. So if he tells you to do one thing, you know, he wants you to get that done. So just intensity that he coaches at, everything he does at. So just at a high level, we just go out there and do what he says.
We're talking DQ Smith, a DB from South Carolina. Now, Chase and I said in the last year, you guys might have been one of the top four football teams in the country. You didn't get in the playoffs. That still pissed you off a little bit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, before the season, we preached that we were going to be one of the top 12 teams in the college football playoff. And, you know, with us being that short, you know, it motivates us a lot. So, you know, we got to work extra harder. You know, that's one or two plays versus teams that cost us to be in the playoffs. You know, we don't want to have that feeling again.
What's it like now? I mean, because Coach Beamer, I mean, South Carolina's always been a very strong program. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the last year, he's put it to this next level. What's it like now, Ben? Because that state loves South Carolina football.
Yes, it's amazing now because, you know, when he first came in, you know, we could all sense of what type of coach he was. And, you know, it's starting to translate now with the guys he bring in, the intensity level he coaches at. Everything is changing, and he's getting to that point now.
I asked the last guy in front of me, Randon Fontenot with Vanderbilt. Coach Beamer could have brought 50 guys down here. Mm-hmm. He brought three. He brought you. What does that mean?
It means a lot because that means he sees what I'm doing. Being a vocal leader, leading a lot of the guys on the team, hardworking, always in the facility working no matter what it is, and, you know, just always being a great guy, level-headed guy that's never got a big-headed, just a guy that's always coming in ready to work, consistency, just a great guy. So it means a lot. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
I know we you know, we'll look ahead. We'll look at the schedule. How much do you do that? Or do you really have that one game at a time? Virginia Tech's next up on the schedule. How much do you look ahead?
That's what we kind of preach at South Carolina. Coach Beamer, he preaches that a lot. It's one game at a time. It's like a car, and it's like we have the rearview mirror, and then we have a road in front of us. The rearview mirror is the teams we already play, and in front of us, the teams we have coming up, and who's next in front of us. So, you know, Virginia Tech is the next game we got to take care of. So just after that game, it's the rearview mirror. We look past it. So it's one game at a time.
Do you allow yourself, though, to kind of have those goals of, hey, you know what, an SEC title game is not that far out of reach for us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's our goals. You know, that's one of our goals for the year. Not the last goal we want, obviously, but it's definitely one of our goals we always have.
Talking to DQ Smith, the DB over at South Carolina. All right, let's talk about your quarterback.
Let's do it.
Lenore Sellers. I mean, just the hype around this young man is something else. What do you see from him in practice every day that we don't get to see?
The same thing you see on the field, the same thing you see every day in practice, man. Like running around, making plays, whether it's a play to be made or not, like he's always going to get something positive out of it. So just having that, and then, you know, just the hardworking guy he is, even off the field, in the weight room, the part people don't get to see, the weight room, how he is, conditioning drills or in film or the things he eat, like everything is professional about Lenore's, and that's why you see what you see on Saturdays.
He's a special dude, isn't he?
Special guy. Special guy.
I mean, I have no eligibility left in Cuba, but you make me want to play for South Carolina.
Hey, come on. We got a helmet and shoulder pad waiting on you right now. Come on. We ready.
I love that, man.
Oh, DQ, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Look, a lot of eyes are on you guys this year, and rightfully so. You've earned it. But best of luck, and thanks so much for stopping by.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. DQ Smith joining us here on the program from South Carolina, a team that I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to here at SEC Media Days. Joe, we are up and running. It is fast and furious.
Yes.
We've been here since very early this morning putting things together. And again, Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. And then we're going to have Diego Pavia coming up in the next hour, the fine quarterback from Vanderbilt. You've already heard a couple players as well. So, I mean, we're locked and loaded today.
Can I tell the people what time we got here? 5 o'clock in the morning.
We did.
5 o'clock. So this is not something we just roll in at 11:58. I mean, it's fun. It's furious. There's a lot of things going on. But we did the interview with Diego Pavia, and I'm telling you, man, that was a fun interview with him.
He just the way he carries himself. I mean, we've used this phrase, rock star. And Vanderbilt, you know, has had good players. Like Jay Cutler was a great player at Vanderbilt. He didn't have that rock star persona like Diego has.
I mean, everybody here that we knew were from Nashville was asked about him.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's it like? And they're all talking to him. And I'm telling you, I cannot remember the last time a Vanderbilt player came down here to Media Days and had this much hype around him. Everybody wants to talk to Diego Pavia. And that's good for the program.
And he has certainly earned that. Like I said, we got a lot of stuff in the what do they call it?
The cupboard?
The cupboard.
Somewhere. We've got it in the bag.
That we're going to be doing. But coming up next, we are scheduled to be joined by Cole Kubelik from ESPN and the SEC Network. He's going to stop by our table as we are up and running here on SEC Media Days, chasing Big Joe again. Note the time change. We're noon to 3 this week, all week long. And our coverage presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs on 102.5 The Game. Chase a Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, live Radio Row, Media Drive, Digital Drive is what they're calling it now. Here at SEC
Media
Days.
Hold on, I thought that was something totally different.
I don't know.
Digital Drive was like the internet shows or something in they're calling Radio Row Digital Drive?
Yeah, apparently. Every email I got said formerly Radio Row, so I don't know why.
Imagine how much I paid attention to the email.
There's a big sign behind us that says that.
No, so. It's a Digital Drive lunch, and I was like, oh, I guess I mean the internet people's lunch today. Sorry.
Come on, come eat it.
But aren't the internet people all in their basement? Isn't that where we figured it out?
Until Media Days, and then they all come out.
We are joined now by the great Cole Kubelik from ESPN and the SEC Network. I want to start with Vanderbilt. We recorded an interview with Diego Pavia earlier, and I said
that was boring.
No, I mean, like, I can't think of a player that Vandy's ever had. Cutler was obviously really good, but that just has that kind of persona, that aura that Pavia has, and how much that program needed something like that.
Yeah, the personality is next level. We had the Alabama game obviously last year, which is a pretty big deal. And we had him against Texas, which almost could have been a big deal. And we were in our TV meeting with Diego, and I had the advantage. I had two of his New Mexico State games the prior year. So I got to know Jerry a little bit. I got to know him. I got to know Tim. And it's one of the funniest things this offseason that everybody has been, why would you just go dump $2 million on Diego Pavia and this and that? And I'm like, well, without Tim Beck, it ain't the same deal.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not. I mean, and you probably include Jerry in that too. But Tom asked him, what is your message to your guys in the huddle when things are breaking down or things might not be going great? And he gave us this long coach speak answer that I can't really remember. And at the end of it, he said, and you know what, guys? At the end of the day, I just tell them, you got me. And that was it. And I was like, yeah, they do. They got you. So, but he injects life into everything that he does. And some people might think it's too much. Some people might think it's ridiculous. Like, but it is fun at the end of the day. I think he loves football. I think he loves to compete. I think if you told him, hey, guys, we're not playing with helmets this week, like, he wouldn't even second guess it. He would just say, okay, cool. Like, let's go. Like, he just does not care. And the best quote, I know it's early, but I think this will probably hold. The best quote that I have heard so far at Media Days, we had Clark Lee, Greg McElroy, another on our show this morning, and Greg asked him about this and that. And I said, well, how much media training, you know, as a joke. And he said, here's the thing. I don't want to change Diego. I want Diego Pavia. I want that guy. He goes, now I want to help him. And there are certain things where maybe he's crossed the line or two here or there. But Clark told us a long story about this last offseason last year that he had to do some real time in the mirror with how he handled things and managed things. And one of the things he told us, he said, you know, listen, there are times when guys will do something that I might look at as a strict violation, and that's a game, or that's two games, or that's two series that person's going to miss. And he said, it's one of the things that Jerry Kill's really helped me with is like, hey, man, like your best players help you win.
Right.
We need to find ways to have our best players on the field, not to take them off the field. So essentially he's loosened up a little bit. And like, I love Clark. I think he's a great coach. I think he's doing a great job. And I think that's Diego has been a real test for that, for him to say, hey, some of this extracurricular stuff that you might despise, it's okay. And it can inject some life into your program. It can inject some life into your team. And Pavia does that, man. Like, he is energy. That's what he is.
When you look at Vanderbilt the last, especially last year, is really because, you know, Clark talked about 2023 was really tough for them. Are they shedding that same old Vandy moniker, or do you need to see it again for that truly to go away?
Yeah, they're on the way to it, but I will still say, like, he even kind of referenced something today about, you know, like we can't finagle our way down the field, or we can't use tricks to move the ball. And Greg and I knew what he was saying, but I think I know what he's saying is that there are a lot of people that look at what they do as gimmicky. And so until they get past that, I don't know if they're truly there, but they're on their way. I've been trying to tell people this entire offseason, because my whole story of media days is the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to make the case that it's Texas and Georgia, or Texas, Bama, Georgia, or Texas, Bama, or if you want LSU in there, that's fine. I can convince you that any of those teams will win 11. I can convince you that they'll win 8. But what I really want to know, and I'm really interested in, is like the next 6 to 9 teams. Because there's only one, and that's Mississippi State, that feels like they're truly behind everybody else. Some people are going to say Kentucky right now, but they're kind of wait and see for me. But you take Florida, you take Tennessee, you take Ole Miss, you take Missouri, you take Auburn, you take Vanderbilt. Like, they're all, like, right there. Oklahoma, they're all right there. So who separates? And maybe the more important question is, who's going backwards? Because I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
And so I think what is different right now is that I have confidence walking around these media days saying Vanderbilt ain't going backwards. They're not. They're not going to be worse than they were last year. And that's where other years, if they had a magical season here or there, we would say, okay, well, Vandy's back to Vandy, so like,
yeah, right.
Let's just put them back where they belong, and then we can move on and talk about everybody else. I don't think they're that anymore.
We're talking to Cole Kubelik from the ESPN and the SEC Network. You said you had 2 Diego games in 23. Was one of those the Auburn game?
No. No, I didn't have that game.
Yeah, I had the MTSU New Mexico State game. He ran all over, and I told Chase, I said, he's not going to lose to Auburn the next week. And he ran all over Auburn. And I was like, this guy's got something. And you saw it 2 years ago when he was in New Mexico State.
Yep. The main thing with Diego Pavia is belief. He legitimately doesn't think he's going to lose. And I don't care if it's like a wrestling match, if it's wrestling a bear. If it's, you know, like, I will guarantee you, and if he were here, I would ask him this question in person. I bet Diego Pavia has lost more races against teammates than any college football player in America. Because I bet he challenges more team. Like, he thinks he can beat guys in a race, 40 yards, 100 yards, 50 yards, and he'll go. If anybody challenges him, he'll go do it. And he'll think he can beat him, and then he's not that fast. Like, he doesn't beat you with speed. He's not slow, but, like, he's not, like, a track guy. But I can see, I could easily see him going to a receiver being like, dog, I beat you in the 40 right now. And the guy beats him by like 15 yards. He's like, oh, I got a bad start or something like that. But the main thing with Diego is belief, man. Like, he believes they're going to get a first down. He believes they're going to score. He believes they're going to win. And that's contagious. It really is. Like, because there's a lot of guys that just don't think things are going to always go their way. And when somebody's around you that does think that, and then a couple things do.
Yeah.
That belief begins to fall on you, and you're like, no, man, we can do this. We're going to do this. And that changes the mindset of your program.
Can I ask you, we're going to talk some other stuff real quick with you. The Arch Manning love, right? I get he's a good quarterback, Cole, but I've not seen him.
Well, is he? We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've not seen him at LSU or in Knoxville or in Athens. I don't, where's the
I'll take it a step further for you.
Yeah.
Go back to the last 10 SEC media days. What is the one trait that people will be pointing to as to why a team is most likely to win the SEC?
Quarterback.
Yep. And what are the teams that we just said are most likely to win the league this year? Texas.
Yep.
Georgia. Who else? Bama.
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 And then maybe LSU. If this is 3 years ago, 5 years ago, we're all sitting here going, LSU.
Yeah.
They got Nuss. LSU's going to win it. Why are we not doing that this year?
It's a great point.
I hadn't seen Ty Simpson play real football. Now, I had the Mississippi State game when Art started last year. I think he's got big-time skill. I think his demeanor is going to help him a lot more than people believe and understand, because he is he has a it comes across in a very different way to what Pavia does. It's like, he just doesn't care, man. Like, Arch thinks he can do it. He's not going to tell you that. He's very low-key person. Like, he's not out with it like Pavia is, but deep down, like, he thinks he can do it. And, I mean, Ty Simpson, we hadn't seen these guys play.
Right, we haven't.
But we just think, like, Gunnar Stockton started, what, two games?
Yeah.
Yep.
And we just think he's fine. Like, we don't know, man. And so does that mean it opens the door for a Florida or a South Carolina who probably do have that guy to propel them up ahead of the others? I don't know the answer to that, but I do think it's interesting that this year, like, every other year we would have said, nah, first-year quarterback, first-year quarterback, first-year quarterback, or unproven quarterback. But now all of a sudden this year it's, well, he started a game, he's fine. Or he started two games, he's good. Or he came in that game, he's okay. And it might not be that. But I'm with you. I think Arch has a chance to be great. I'm not putting him in the proven commodity category just
thank
yet.
You. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Cole Kubelik is here with us. Speaking of quarterbacks, Tennessee obviously had their deal with Nico transferring out as late as he did. How do you view the Vols going into this year with the uncertainty at quarterback? It seems like Coach Heupel has confidence in what he has, but – there's a lot of questions there.
They're in that grouping in the middle of the pack of could separate, could fall back. Are they going to fall back a little from last year? Probably. But I think when Josh Heupel made that decision with Nico that he made, and we all celebrated it, 99% of us were like, hell yeah, man, like, way to go. We appreciate that.
Right.
When you do that as a Tennessee fan, you also need to have the reality check with yourself of, okay, this might be 8 wins this year.
Yeah.
But it's for the greater good, because Joey Aguilar does not have the ceiling that Nico has. Like, he physically, he is not as capable as Nico Iamaliava is. And Nico made some bad reads last year. Nico, at times, eyes played tricks on him. Okay, but just understand the ceiling is not where it was before. But I think Joey's a solid player. He's got a ton of experience, but he doesn't have a ton of experience in this offense, which asks you to do different things. Mainly from a tempo standpoint. Like, there are fundamentals that go along with that that are hard to learn. And they're not natural. You know, it's not natural to know where a play ends and where to immediately go line up for the next play, like, that fast. Like, that's not a normal thing that you do. Being able to read and know things that need to change very quickly because of how fast your offense is going, some of that's not normal. And he hasn't really operated it to the level that he's going to now. But he's got some skill. He's capable. I think their D-line is going to be really good again. Not as deep, but I think it's going to be good. I think the offensive line is my biggest question mark. And the counter that I get to that is, well, 5-star this, 4-star that. All right, well, I hadn't seen those guys play college football.
Right.
So I'm not banking on them just yet.
Have they figured out Heupel's up-tempo offense? I feel like last year was, I want the go, 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 and now I'm getting the backing off the center, checking the sidelines, and it's just like.
I think part of the reason was with that last year is that oftentimes they run the ball with success due to that tempo. And last year they could run the ball with success without it. And so he understood he had a younger quarterback that needed maybe more time to see and process things. And the offensive line in the tight end group in the back, they were good enough to just go run. They could call it and run it, run plays, and get away with it. And oftentimes their success comes from the tempo. They trap you in a look or a defensive personnel grouping that allows them to keep running it. And last year, I don't think they needed all that to have success running the football.
Interesting, because, you know, 22 with Hooker, it was go, 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 and people couldn't figure it out and ended up with them going to the Orange Bowl. I just felt like it was a little slower and people had time to get adjusted to that.
But I also think, too, it's a little bit of Josh's evolution. Like, I know last season their main point of emphasis was physicality. It was, we need to know how to hammer. Like, we need to close out games. We need to control the tempo of games. Yeah. And controlling the tempo of games sometimes was not going fast all the time. Saying, all right, if we're going to be in a dogfight on the road, Do we want them to have two or three extra possessions? No. Slow it down. It's okay. And with a younger quarterback on the road, on top of that, I think that was another reason that they did it. But with the physicality that they added and had some success with, I think that's why they were able to do it.
You talked earlier about you wanted to see the next six or nine of that pack breakout. Who's one team that you really like that's not the Texas, Georgia, Alabama level?
There are reasons to like a lot of them. South Carolina is a team that I like. I think it's easy to look at what they lost on defense. Kyle Kennard was great. Obviously, Tonka Hemingway, TJ Sanders, Boogie Huntley inside were great.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you just replaced those guys. Demetrius Knight was the most interesting man in the SEC at linebacker. Like, he was awesome. He'll be tough to replace. Nicky Munori. But you start going through it, and you're like, man, Judge Collier and DQ Smith, like, these guys have played a lot of football in this system.
Yeah.
And Dylan Stewart's a takeover guy. You go get a legit talent in Sean Murphy, who signed with Alabama, went to Florida State at linebacker. Like, he might be an upgrade physically. And then on offense, you got some young receivers that could help quarterback out. I'll just say this. That offense did not score against the defense in spring or fall last year.
Ooh.
They were worried about that group. It's not going to be like that now. And it might not be a top three offense in the league, but it's going to be better than it was. So I think they're a team that I think a lot of people are looking at right now, and they're saying, yes, Lenore Sellers, yes, Dylan Stewart, but I don't know about all this. And I'm kind of like, well, they might be okay with all that. Like Joshua Simon at tight end, I don't know if they have another guy like him. He was great for them the last few years. But this is what I do know. Shane Beamer has gotten more from less out of the portal than any coach in this league. Because I just mentioned Joshua Simon at tight end. Nobody was talking about him coming from Western Kentucky.
Right.
Kyle Kennard at Media Days last year, not a word. Dude leads the SEC in sacks. Demetrius Knight from Charlotte.
Yep.
Got drafted. Nobody talking about it. Mario Anderson at running back a couple years ago. D2 kid. Almost ran for 1,000 yards. Nick Gargiulo from the Ivy League 2 years ago. Starts at center every game. Nobody talking about it.
Yeah.
So there's going to be two or three guys on that team that are transferring in that none of us are talking about that are going to end up being pretty good players.
For sure. Cole Kublik here with us. I know you got to go. I know you got a lot to do. Thanks so much for jumping on with us and coming by. And we look forward to watching you on ESPN and SEC Network.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Cole Kublik joining us here on the program at SEC Media Days. We are on Digital Drive, Radio Row. Coming up next, Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee will join the program. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, The Game. Chase and Big Joe live on Media Drive Radio Row, SEC Media Days, and our coverage is presented by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Also, locations in Bellevue on Highway 100 and Charlotte Pike in Nashville West. And, of course, today, Monday, kicking things off, part of the festivities, the Vanderbilt Commodores coming off what we all thought was an exciting season last year, and Clark Lee, their fine head coach, has sat down with us. And Coach, we were just kind of chatting before we went on the air here of how nice it must feel to come in this year knowing that you guys accomplished so much last year, but also knowing that it's not finished yet. You're not where you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the goal for any team is to know you're making progress, but know that there's so much more for you out in front. And that's how we feel, you know. I mean, I think the other part of it is it's always going to be challenging. We play in a league that's unforgiving. So, you know, we're going to have to be super focused on the details and in the present and maximize our team. But we like our team and we're fired up. So it's a good place to be right now.
I feel like this is the part of college football, college athletics that we have to go through every year. How many of your guys from last year return this year? We obviously know Diego is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, we return a lot. I mean, I don't have it out right in front of me, but we're top 10 in the country with returning production, that there's a lot to be excited. And I think it would be wrong of me not to mention, when you retain right now in the landscape of college football, you're talking about resources. You know, I mean, nothing is free anymore. So this is like the combination of both the maturing of our build, you know, the foundation we laid, and how we've been able to pull it forward and double down on it, and then a university that's shaping around our mission too. And I'm very grateful to Chancellor Diermeier and Candace Lee. I think their support in this effort. Without them, you know, we wouldn't be where we are. So being able to retain a coaching staff, being able to retain our players, bringing back the production we bring back, there's every reason to believe we should be well positioned. Now we got to go make it happen.
We're here on Radio Row with Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Coach, do we talk about last year or do we not?
Oh, I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah.
Most coaches like, last year's last year. We got to worry about this year and go forward. But how much do you look at what you did last year? Because I know there's a lot of guys returning, a lot of guys have left and all that. But how much do you bounce off of that for this year?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I think both good and bad. You know, I mean, we talk about it. You know, it's a shared experience. I mean, that's our learning. So for us, it's hey, let's go back to Virginia Tech. Let's think about some of the things that happened in that game where we had a really commanding lead and then we let it slip. Some of that is their counterpunching. Some of that is us learning how to sustain and to win. Let's talk about Georgia State. Let's get back in those moments. Let's relive November where, you know, coming out of the Auburn game, we felt like we had the right energy going into the game and weren't able to sustain performance against South Carolina, against LSU, and against Tennessee. What is it going to take for us to win in November? Those are conversations that pretty much every time I'm in front of the team, some variation of that is being talked about in addition to the things that are right in front of us. So it's shared learning. It's our experience. It's what we need to draw from to improve.
All too often, Vanderbilt comes down here with good players that you introduced to the media. Now you've got a rock star in Diego. How much fun is it watching him from last year to this year and kind of showing him off today to everybody who now knows his name?
Yeah, I mean, Diego, you go wherever you want to go. Any place that's watching college football, they know about Diego Pavia. And he's earned that. He's earned that recognition. Obviously, I feel like he's been such a transformative presence in our program. But the coolest part to me is that he's an energy source for our university, our Nashville community, and then college football fans everywhere. I mean, you know, to have him representing Vanderbilt, we need this right now, yeah. Right? As we're trying to get this program to a point of sustainability, as we're trying to become a part of the national conversation. To have a dynamic leader on the field like that, who is a great connector and community. That the best part about Diego is, you know, he is such a humble, hardworking, nice guy who, you know, my kids all look up to him, and you know, he gives them a little street cred at school. You know, it's like it's kind of that's a fun part of this. So yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about him. I'm appreciative to have him back. I think the game's better to have him back. You know, he's great for our sport, and this is his opportunity to cement a legacy with Vanderbilt football. It'll be memorable, and I know he's excited to do that.
How much carte blanche do you give him to run the offense, like to make his own decision? Not saying his own play calling, but how much do you give to him and say, "All right, you're on the field. I'm not. Let's go."
Yeah, I mean, I think he and Tim Beck have been together for a while now, and so I think there's a lot of. I mean, they see the game the same way. Tim, I think it's important to give Tim credit because, you know, I've not seen many people in my entire career that have the ability to call a game quite like Tim calls it. Yeah. His courage, his feel, it's impressive. He also, I think when you look at our offensive design, it's a perfect blend of chaos, you know, that we need.
The
number of unbalanced formations we use, the motions, the option, the quarterback runs, all that. And so you have this dynamic system with a really effective play caller, you know, and then what Diego does is brings his experience too. So he has a voice and he has an opinion and he has a perspective and he's courageous enough to speak up when he feels like he's seeing something. And when it all fits together the right way, you know, Tim's leading it, Diego's got a say in it, and there are times on that field where Tim's going to rely on Diego to see what he needs to see to get us into the right call and to run the play. It's worked well to this point, and you hope that every year they're together, right. It works a little bit better.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee is here with us. Now, how does Jerry Kill fit into all of this? Because I know he came on last year, and he was a big part of Diego and everything and working with Tim Beck. How does he kind of fit in and help you?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking about Jerry because he's such a important part. I think I've been thinking about it. Summertime for me is a chance to reflect a little bit, like reflect on some of the things that we accomplished, but also where we're headed. And, you know, Jerry's been such a support to me. So essentially the goal last year was that I was able to focus solely on defense, that Jerry was going to be kind of a head coaching presence with the offense and really be in support of Tim. When I was in meetings with a defensive staff, they were going to be problem solving and Jerry was going to bring me the problems that they needed my help with. You know, he's been a mentor in the building for me, a guy that, you know, like as a head coach, man, it can get kind of lonely, you know, and
yeah.
Jerry knows that. And so he's the one guy on the bad days. He'll come in and check on me and say, how you doing, coach? And he'll share kind of stuff from his experience. And sometimes it's just him saying, hey, we're doing the right things. Hey, we're on the right track. You're doing a good job. You know, that reinforcement can just help with confidence too. But when you look at the play on the field, the toughness of the team, you know, Jerry's fingerprints are on that. And I think in so many ways, what I wanted was this team to reflect my competitive personality. I wanted to recognize the group that I saw on the field. And at various times in my time at Vanderbilt, I've felt that way. In 23, there were more times where I did not. And right. that was probably the hardest part of 23 for me, was not that we weren't getting results. I think I could look at, you know, where we were and say, hey, look, it's going to be hard this season. We had a young team. We're replacing a lot of snaps. But when we weren't competing the way we needed to compete, that's when I knew there needed to be a change. Jerry's helped me and helped the program keep a focus on the things that are most important. What's our identity? You know, what's our competitive personality? How are we bringing that to the forefront every day? And, you know, he's become a great friend.
And great. Also, Steve Gregory was on your staff last year. Now he kind of takes over as the defensive coordinator. Why was now the right time to maybe, you know, you're still obviously going to be involved, yeah, obviously, as a defensive-minded coach, but back off a little bit and let him take over as the defensive play caller?
Yeah, it felt to me, I guess there's two things that for me were, those two jobs are really hard. I think, you know, being an offensive play caller and a head coach is probably a little less challenging than a defensive sure. play caller and head coach. I think the amount of time a defensive coach needs to spend in the plan, because it's reactionary. You've got to build it based off what the opponent does. And so, when I was at Notre Dame doing it, I was able to do everything, you know, and I spent 100 hours a week doing that singular job. That was never going to be the case this year. I had to be more collaborative. I had to rely on staff. And with Steve, you know, I've got a trusted partner there. With guys like Nick Lozinski and Larry Black, I mean, I've worked with these guys now for a while. They were with me in South Bend. So we had the ability last year to let the process function without me being in the room. It was really important that they weren't waiting on me to do their job. And so Steve took on a big burden of that, you know, responsibility. And that includes scripting practice. That includes at times in base downs, you know, crafting the base game plan, knowing that I'd be responsible for calling it. I spent a lot of my time on third down, which, you know, to be honest with you, with our numbers, didn't go as well as I would have liked. But it was just so collaborative. By the end of the season, you know, he was taking on play calling responsibilities. And the reason for that was I felt like he was spending more time in the plan than I was. And to be fair to our players, I mean, look, what I want to make sure is that our systems are sound, that the point at which we get to that play call, we've had a process we've gone through. Because the system is in my language and it's what I'm familiar with, it's very easy for me to have input and to have an opinion. I just feel like it's best in service to our players to have someone who's dedicated to that job. And I get a chance to be there and support, and again, to have an opinion, and I'll be with those guys every day. I'll be in front of the defensive unit every day. I'm not giving that up because that's the most fun I've had as a coach. So I don't want more time in front of the donor base. I want more time in front of my team and in front of the players and helping them be successful.
Oh, that's awesome. Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee is with us here at SEC Media Days. We talked before you came on. Not saying you didn't have any, but you got some cachet now when you walk around here. Because last year was like, oh, there's that Vanderbilt coach. What's going to happen? You beat Alabama. You probably should have beaten Texas. You go to the bowl game. A great season. Does it feel different, coach, being here this year?
It does. I mentioned earlier, I think this event to me, the feelings are the same insofar as like you know the season's coming. And so I'm going to go back tonight and I'll kind of really – the next 2 weeks are important for me. I've got to get a lot done to make sure that we're positioned, because once you go into fall camp, you're submerged and you come up for air in January, you know. Look, I'm proud of our program. I'm proud of it. I think I've got this feeling right now where, you know, I'm excited to have something at stake. It feels like we have chips on the table. And that's important. I've missed that. Now – The counter to that is we're not guaranteed anything, you know. So for as challenging as it was a year ago, we had eight games to one possession. You know, I mean, that's thin margins. That won't change. So, you know, how do we develop this team to be prepared to win those margins? How do we make sure we keep our attitude and our focus where it needs to be? We have to be the junkyard dog in the league. I mean, we're the one that everyone's going to count out. I mean, that hasn't changed.
Right.
I don't pay attention to what expectations are externally just because it doesn't matter to me. But I can imagine that they're not sitting here, you know, picking us to win the league and all that kind of stuff. So we carry a chip on our shoulder. We focus on the work. We know that we're not guaranteed anything. But we're excited about where we position this program, and we're going to go fight for it.
Yeah, what's it? Is everything the stadium done? Everything good? Are we good to go for that first game? I mean, are the brand new stadium is all good?
Yeah, I think I believe the last nail will be nailed in as we're putting the ball on the tee. So they're going to use every second they have. But it looks great. I've been in there. I've been through kind of the spaces. I'm excited to have a locker room in the stadium. I mean, we've never had that ever,
right.
You know, I mean, we've had a little holding tank over there, but to actually have a space, a dedicated space for our team on game day, what a neat thing. You know, the last 2 years, you know, last year we crossed the street and we used the weight room as our kind of meeting space. The year before we were in the pitching lab. And if you remember, that was where we had the scoreboards hanging on cranes. And
yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we don't focus on those things because, it can't affect us. We have to focus on the work, but that was hard. You know, I mean, that was inconvenient.
Yeah.
There were just things about that you don't want to have to deal with. Well, now to have a completed stadium and I think what's going to be a really neat environment. I thought a year ago the environment enhanced just with the north side done. That's energizing to us. And for me, because I'm a maniac. It's like, so now we focus on what's next. You know, we got to get going on an operations facility. We have to do the things and invest in areas that will allow this to be sustainable, because that's always been the point.
That's awesome. Another question. Do you have any parts of the Alabama win goalpost in your house or in your office or anywhere around?
I do. I have
yes.
Not in the house. I've got – they gave me a piece of the goalpost, so it's up there. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite parts about that experience, and again, I want to be clear, like I don't, you know, in the over the course of last season, there are a couple other games to me that felt more important. I don't know how to say, but like, or bigger to me personally, that were just like, man, I'm really proud of the way the team showed up. You talk about the win at Auburn, where I felt like we squeezed everything out of the tube in a really challenging situation, physically, mentally, emotionally, and we found a way to get to six. The bowl win obviously was historic for us. The way we opened the season, I mean, that one could have been straightforward, but man, it had everything against Virginia Tech, you know, the back and forth, the overtime. Alabama was a moment where we were 2-2 as a team, and you know, I expected my team to show up and fight. There are elements to the way we closed that game out that I'm really proud of. And then the celebration afterwards for our community is probably the thing that stands out the most. My favorite thing is talking to Vanderbilt fans and listening to their like spin on it. This is where I was. This is what I was doing. I was in Hawaii with the family, and I again, this was our vacation. We go as far away as we can.
Yeah.
Sure enough, the place where we're staying, I had a guy approach me who is an alum, 2015, and he and his wife were honeymooning in Hawaii, and they were married on the Saturday of the Alabama game. And so talked about, you know, all being huddled around the TVs. I mean, just to say this, I get to do something that has such an incredible ripple effect for people in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that is so special, and that's not lost on me. But that game in particular is one where I've gotten to learn a lot about, I guess, you know, what makes people a little bit crazy too, you know. It's been cool.
Well, as we wrap this up, you know, I've told you this before. I grew up a Vanderbilt fan. I've lived this my entire life. And listening to you talk and kind of seeing where things were when you first took the job to where they are now, it does feel like it's just kind of built. It's slowly built up. Do you feel that, and you kind of referenced this earlier, that phrase, "Oh, same old Vandy," is slowly starting to go away? And there is that respect that I think you all have earned.
Yeah, I think it has to be because I haven't heard it in a long time, you know. And I think early on I was so combating that. I was so focused on, and I don't judge that negatively. I think I needed to be. I think in some ways I knew the past, and I was just desperate to break away from it. I had no idea how hard this was going to be.
Sure.
To be honest with you, I mean, I think I knew resources need to change. I knew facilities need to change. I knew attitudes need to change, but I didn't really understand the depth of the damage that losing had done over time to our players and to the people that serve the program. And so it's just taken so much time. What I understood, though, was once we got the attitude internally right, it would then manifest externally.
Right.
If we don't get the attitude right internally, why would anyone else expect us, or why would anyone else not judge us for the same old band here, whatever? We have something that's solid now, and I think people respect it. And I don't really care about that, you know, because at the end of the day, all I want is self-respect. I want us to see the value of what we're part of and to invest in every day. We're doing that. That's the only way we continue to move it forward. And I'm actually really proud of, you know, the fact with your question that I'm not spending a lot of energy worried about anymore what those perceptions are. Yeah. It's just like, hey, what do we believe about who we are? How are we manifesting and actualizing our program every day, our team every day? And that's going to be good enough to win us games. Now we got to go find those margins.
Love it. Before I let you go, you did something in 2021, which I talked to Chase about this. Nobody had done before, at least we had known of. The Barton Simmons hire as your general manager. I'm like, what in the world is this going on?
Yeah, we hated that, by the way.
He was great on the radio. Yeah.
You took Barton, our recruiting guy, but that's okay.
And now everybody's got that. Was that your idea to bring in like a player
manager?
Personnel guy?
Yeah, so, it's interesting. You would think that I was anticipating this chaos that we've...
Right.
Obviously, I wasn't because it took us a couple years to adjust to it. But my thought was... When I looked at the staff, this was my experience as a position coach, as a coordinator. How do you create systems? I mean, we're systems builders as coaches. So yeah. Systems that function independent of the head coach, that I can actually monitor the system, but I'm not directly involved in every decision. And I thought in particular with respect to personnel, that was really important because coaches come and coaches go. And we're all biased. So as a position coach, you recruit guys. I mean, it can become silly, the bias that's created around, you know, a relationship or whatever. And so I always wanted there to be a check and a balance to the recruiting, the position coach's board, the side of ball board, the decisions we're making. And I needed someone to protect the five-year vision of the program. Well, here we are 5 years into it. Well, that Barton and I obviously have a friendship that goes way back. You know, when I walk the halls of the building, I know that there are some people that, you know, are going to be with us for a time. And I think that's the point. You know, it's like I want people to come and work at Vanderbilt that then go on to do great things. And I want them all to aspire to more. And some of that more is going to be in our building. Some of it's going to mean they're going to have to leave at some point. You know, Barton's a guy who fights for the long-term vision of the program every day. And we've had to learn in that role, just like I've learned in my role, just like Ben Cawthon's learned in his role. I mean, it's taken us time to really get a grip on exactly what it is that we're looking for and what we're doing. Obviously, as you've added the transactional elements to this, that position becomes really important. It keeps me insulated from negotiations. So I don't get in front of my team embittered. You know, like I want to be able to look at my team and see the goodness in what we're doing, not remember the tough negotiation that happened 30 minutes before, you know.
Right.
And so Barton's taken on a lot of that responsibility. I mean, Earl Bennett's got a part in that. We've worked with Anchor Impact in that too, to this point. But yeah, that was the vision for the role, was someone who was monitoring our, you know, recruiting efforts, our scouting efforts, you know, how we were, who we were acquiring, what was the raw data of what we're looking for, length, speed, how are we making sure we're thorough in our evaluations and not just leaving it to the coach who's going to be biased towards who he likes.
Coach Clark Lee is here with us, SEC Media Days. Coach, thanks so much for doing this. I know you got a lot to do today, but we've enjoyed spending this time with you. Enjoy the day, and we can't wait for just a few weeks, about a month away, I guess, and we'll kick things off. So appreciate it.
Thanks, guys, for letting me be with you.
Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, joining us here at SEC Media Days, presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. We'll have more coming here on 102.5 The Game.